and thanks for tuning in to Inside Scoop Live. I'm your host, Juanita Watson, and joining me today is author Milana Ashley, author of the award-winning expat memoir, Gringos in Paradise, Our Honduras Odyssey. Just over 30 years ago, our guest Milana was given an intuitive reading as a birthday gift. The reader of Cards and Ruins told her that she saw papers all around her and asked if she was a student or a writer. Milana, then a busy wife, mother of three, and a horticultural entrepreneur, replied with a very emphatic no way and immediately threw all credibility related to psychics out the window. Within 15 years from the day, she had received degrees in naturopathy, herbal sciences, subtle energy work, and as well as a PhD in metaphysics. She continues to enhance her holistic healing knowledge as a student with traditional elders of Hawaiian and Mayan cultures, and she has been widely published on the subjects of holistic health and spiritual growth. Dr. Milana currently lives on the Caribbean coast of Honduras, traveling occasionally to teach workshops and retreats that incorporate ancient wisdom into modern life. She has two websites, gringos-in-paradise.com, and that is for her book, and her other website is wisdompathway.com. So that said, all the way from Honduras today is Milana. Thank you for joining us.
Hola, ¿qué tal? How are you doing?
Well, very well. How are you today, Milana?
I'm doing great. The sun is shining here. It's beautiful. We're running around in shorts and tanks, and depending upon what part of the U.S. you live in, that may not be real impressive information, but I know that there's places now in almost November that would probably like to go back to shorts and tanks.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. So I'm so interested in hearing from you, what really was the catalyst for this life of travel? From what I understand, you actually started living in Florida, you went to Hawaii for several years, and now you're in Honduras.
Exactly. Yes, it was really strange because as a child, we moved around a lot, and my greatest desire was to have one place to live, a place to put down roots. Mm-hmm. That's what I wanted for my children, is what I didn't have. I think as parents, we always do that. And then once my children came along, I moved around looking for the perfect place again. And then they were graduating from high school when all of a sudden the shift came and I left the Ozark Mountains. That's where I was living at the time. Mm. And that's where it took me to Florida and then, of course, Hawaii. But there's no really one clear-cut reason why we chose Honduras. We just felt called to get closer to our families in the eastern and midwest parts of the U.S.
Mm-hmm.
And there was enough changes going on in the family, and we could feel that the islands were changing. It was not the secluded area that we had gone into. I think Oprah Winfrey and Donald Trump had a big discussion on the best place to invest money mm-hmm. at that time, mm-hmm. and one of them was the island of Hawaii. So here come the bulldozers and mm-hmm. all the baby boomers taking advantage of the lower interest rates. And you know, it just felt like it was time to go.
Yeah.
So what we did was we made a list of things that each one of us wanted in our new home and in a new location. And then every day we just spent quiet time meditating or just sitting with our list and allowed the law of attraction to work.
Mm. And then there was Honduras.
And it was Honduras. It was our home. I mean, we found our home on the Internet. We just surfed for home for sale in La Ceiba area of Honduras, and here was our home. It was front page. I mean, it was like somebody knocked the first domino and everything came in order. The person bought our house in Hawaii for the price that we wanted. We moved here. I mean, there's always states of anxiety, but really things move smoothly for us as opposed to horror stories that could have happened.
Mm. And do you think this was because you and your husband had that positive attitude and really did some great groundwork to lay that that flow, that easy flow?
With the ground, most of the groundwork that we laid was definitely on a subtle energy level,
yes,
on a spiritual level, because the only thing we could do physically was, neither of us had ever been to Honduras before, other than, I had been in the Yucatan area of Mexico in the past, and about 2 years before I moved, I had begun to study with Mayan elders in Guatemala and had made one trip to the Copan ruins in Honduras. That was the extent of my travels outside the U.S. And neither one of us spoke Spanish, so our groundwork was basically done on that subtle energy level. And one trip, once we decided for sure that we would come to Honduras, I had met a man at a convention, and he lives outside of Las Vegas. That's where his business is. And he was Honduran by birth and had lived in the U.S. for 20 years. And when I called him to tell him what we were contemplating and to get his opinion, he said, I think that it would probably be wonderful. He says, it's a wonderful country. He says, but, I have to tell you, my fellow countrymen have kind of a Robin Hood mentality.
Yeah.
And it's not for everybody. You really need to go check it out. But if you want to go, I will take you. And he did. He does a television program. He's got a business. He runs a church. And he arranged that all those things would be covered for a period of 10 days so that he and my husband could come to Honduras together, and he
wow.
could introduce him to his family and to contacts that he had to help us make the final decision as to whether or not this would be for us.
What an auspicious meeting.
That's what I'm telling you, because we didn't rely just on ourselves. We asked for guidance from a higher power. It just all moved so smoothly, and it has been such a blessing for us.
That's great.
Like I said, it's not for everyone. I know some gringos, Americans, that have moved here, and it's not been as sweet a connection.
What do you think the difference is?
For one, we don't live in a community of other Americans.
Mm-hmm.
Sometimes when, which is a blessing, because all of our neighbors speak Spanish just about. So if we're not happy, we only have each other to grouse to. And we get over it.
Yeah.
But if we had someone to complain to, then it would probably make them more aware of what they're unhappy about, and then they would complain. part of what I do with my holistic health business is that I counsel.
Mm-hmm.
And when women come to me who are having marital problems, the one advice that I give them while they're making their decisions, while they're, while they're processing through what it is that they want for their future, that they not complain to their friends about their husband, and that if any of their friends that are unhappy with their relationship, that they withdraw from that, spending a lot of time with them. Because other than that, negativity feeds
mm-hmm.
other negativity, just like fear feeds fear.
And it just grows and grows.
We were blessed enough, to complain.
That's great. I love that.
And so what we had to do was we had to give ourselves time to change our perception of things.
Mm.
Americans, we do everything by the dollar and the clock.
True.
And other countries do not, and especially romance language countries like Spanish, because they are relationship languages. So the relationship is more important than the dollar or the hour. And so, part of what people have to leave at the immigration desk when they come into the country is their need to have everything the way that they had it at home. Because
mm-hmm.
this is not where you've come from. And, people will, you talk to somebody about doing a work, a job for you here, and they'll go, oh, yeah, I'm mañana.
Yeah, right.
Here in the morning. And then they don't come.
It could be next week and sometime in the morning, right?
Or they never come.
Or they never come.
Really did. They didn't want the job. But they don't want to hurt your feelings and tell you that they don't want the job. They don't want to work for you, you know, in what it was that you want done. Maybe it's dirty concrete work or something, and they don't like to do that.
Mm-hmm.
So they'll just say, oh, mañana. And then they don't show up. And then once the job is done sometime or other, they'll show up. They'll bring some bananas. They'll bring their wife and kids to visit you because they're going to the beach or something. And it's okay.
Just a total different pace of life. That's so great. Well, what do you think the experience of culture shock really is? Is it what you're talking about?
I think so. I think, now, part of it, you know, this country is considered a third world country.
Yeah.
I'm sure that they didn't name themselves third world country. It had to be somebody of a greater somewhere where they determined themselves higher on the list. Because, you know, they have electricity here and things like that. But they don't have waste disposal systems like we're accustomed to in the U.S. And I had noticed this the first time that I went into Mexico. You know, I was going to Cancun. That was my first taste of out-of-the-U.S. travel. And back when Cancun was little. And so you arrive at the airport and you are bused to the tourist area of Cancun, but you're driving through all of this trash that's along the side of the road.
Mm-hmm.
And it's, and pigs are digging through it, and, you know, that kind of stuff. And it's like, ooh, you know, why don't they clean up the trash, you know, because this is a tourist area. Well, where the tourists are housed is immaculate,
mm-hmm.
but on the way there is not. And it's because, you know, these are people that have always taken their rubbish and thrown it on the ground because their rubbish was banana peels and fish skins and bones and other things that would decompose or be consumed by something as part of nature. And now we've introduced them to plastics and metals, and they don't have a waste disposal system to take care of that, so they do the same thing that they've always done, which is throw it on the ground.
Mm-hmm.
And then someone else comes along and cleans it up, and they just move it away from your sight. So, you know, that, to me, that's a shock. But, you know, I saw it in Hawaii, too, and, you know, we had Lady Bird Johnson. And then the second thing is that the poverty, you know, there's not a lot of middle class here. There's the impoverished and the very wealthy. And just now, the middle class is growing, which is what gives the country its strength. Gives any country its strength. It's the middle class that always carries the country. And so with many people having not a lot of extra, when they have animals, they share what they have with the animals. And then, you know, anything more that the animals want, they roam around and forage for on their own. So they keep the rats and mice down and,
mm-hmm.
and, you know, the possums and all that kind of stuff, which, you know, it's a symbiotic relationship. But we're used to fat and fluffy and shiny animals in this country.
True.
And they're, you know, they are here if they're the animals of wealthy people,
mm-hmm.
but the average working people share exactly what they have. You know, then, you know, dogs and, yeah, I see cats eat tortillas.
Mm-hmm.
You know, to my knowledge, just cats are only protein eaters.
Right, they'll eat anything. Oh,
when
do you
they're hungry, they'll eat anything.
For sure. What do you think is causing the middle class to grow in Honduras?
I think the influence of tourism.
Mm-hmm.
I think that the democracy, for one thing, as the countries have become democratic, more opportunities have been made available to people. And then tourism and interest from other countries coming in for to set up industry. You know, a lot of clothes anymore that you find in the U.S., if you look at the labels, they're made in Guatemala, they're made in Honduras, they're made in Nicaragua.
Mm-hmm.
And so that has given more opportunity to working class people.
Create more money for the country. Well, you're kind of situated in between Belize and Costa Rica, which are two big, big tourism areas. Do you think that Honduras will get to that level of tourism at some point?
I believe that it will. Honduras is very focused on ecotourism,
mm-hmm.
because they take a lot of pride in their Mayan roots and in the Lenca Indians roots that are here, and they try to keep those areas as natural as possible, so that when tourists come, you know, Roatan is Honduras, and it has been a big tourist draw
yes.
for years and years and years,
mm-hmm.
because the snorkeling is wonderful. But there's also the Bay of Trujillo, which is on the mainland, and Utila, one of the other Bay Islands. So I think that people are becoming more interested, and especially as, you know, we're coming into 2012 and
mm-hmm.
and the Mayan calendar.
Mm-hmm.
So people are more interested in learning about the Mayan cultures that existed here, and Copan is a big one.
Well, tell me.
I mean, it's not the biggest by area, but it is one that the government has made very available for people to be able to study.
How close are you to Copan?
For me to go to Copan is about a 5-hour bus ride.
Okay.
And the bus I'm talking about is an air-conditioned, very nice bus that doesn't stop other than in San Pedro Sula. But by bus it would be 5 hours. If I took a little plane from La Ceiba to San Pedro Sula and then caught the bus, it would be probably 3 hours, but I'd have to sit and wait for an airplane, so I have to take the bus.
Take the bus. Well, you are a student of Mayan cultures and Hawaiian cultures, so I'd like for you to maybe tell us a little more about your experience spiritually in the area that you're now in, and what that area means to the Mayans and to you.
There's a connective bond between the Hawaiians and the Mayans. And the Mayan maestro that I follow the path of is Don Alejandro. And don't ask me to say his last name, because I don't say it often enough to be able to do it properly. But right now he's the president of the Council of Elders in Guatemala. And he's a 13th generation Mayan healer. He is the one who took me on my 10-day pilgrimage through Guatemala and Honduras, visiting the ancient sites. And we did fire ceremony. And see, I was drawn to studying with indigenous or traditional elders back in Florida when I had my natural health clinic, because my in the first course of study for me as a naturopath, it says a naturopath goes back to the root cause of the problem instead of just treating symptoms. And so that was my prayer, to always be shown the root cause of the problem. And that took me into emotional healing work, subtle energy work, then into metaphysics and the study of religion, because all of these things are integrated into who we are as people. The original healers were priests,
mm-hmm.
and still are in many, many cultures. And then also was the fact that when you look at indigenous people, they generally don't have the chronic diseases that we have created in our first world countries.
Mm-hmm.
So I found that very insightful. And where I was going with doing fire ceremony is that the Hawaiian people, the Mayan people, even the ones who traditionally follow sacred Native American customs, their balance, their connection to the total world around them keeps the balance that helps maintain their health. we would do fire ceremony on the 13-day calendar, because the Mayans actually have three calendars, like calendars within calendar. And Papa would do, you know, it was very involved to set up this area for the fire ceremony with sugar and salt and candles for the four directions and the four cardinal directions, and then the above and below, and the connection with Great Spirit. And then once the fire had started, what he would do is he would start on that particular day of the Mayan calendar, the day of Ek or the day of Tar or whatever. And he would say, you know, that this is the day that is dedicated to midwives. And he would talk a little bit about that. And that each of us would put a little banana resin thing into the fire to give back to Great Spirit a thank you for the gift that Great Spirit has given us in the creation of midwives, of seed, of work, of parents. You know, seed being our children as well as seed for the ground, of work. Mm-hmm. They never said thank you for money. They said thank you for work, because work supplies everything that you need.
Mm.
And for the animals, and for, I mean, it was just amazing. And it's a ceremony of gratitude. And see, that made perfect sense to me once it clicked in, because part of what is necessary for healing is gratitude. Because you cannot move away from the space that you're in if you're tied to it with negativity. So you have to see the blessing in it. You know, even if you don't really understand the blessing in it, you just go through the ritual of going, thank you for what is happening in my life right now. What happens is that you start to do what Stephen Covey calls the paradigm shift.
Mm.
And when you do, your actual energy field becomes more expansive. So you are releasing denser energy that is sometimes trauma that has been in damaged tissue, or trauma from emotional impact that, you know, based on our breath, we tend to hold in instead of release. And so, you know, that's, you know, with the Hawaiians, they do Ho'oponopono. My kapuna on the Big Island, Jessie Kay, her grandfather taught her to do Ho'oponopono. And with Ho'oponopono, the healer, the practitioner, goes to the person who is sick in their bed. They bring in all the members of the family and the community, and they form a circle, and the sick person just starts to talk about how they feel and what their illness is, and then everybody starts, and invariably it's always linked to some painful experience,
mm-hmm.
some accident that wasn't an accident, whatever. And so the family and the community all start to verbally make amends to each other, and it's the most remarkable healing situation you've ever seen.
That's beautiful. We have nothing to compare that to in a modern Western culture, do we?
No. We can do counseling.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, counseling has its place. But, you know, you can talk a thing to death, but maybe not totally resolve it.
Right.
And it's kind of the Native American, you know, burying the hatchet, breaking the arrow, burying the hatchet. And just letting go.
Mm. Mm-hmm. Now, you experiencing these traditional cultures and this really ancient healing methods, how has this changed your life and in your spiritual journey and your own healing, physical, spiritual, emotional? How are you different from going through all of this personally?
You know, when I first became a naturopath, I found out that it's against the law in the United States to say that you heal anybody.
Yeah, that's true.
It was a real shock to me. But then it began to make sense, you know, once you let go of the emotional attachment to being a healer. Because the only true healing comes from within. And so when we go to a naturopath or a deal or a doctor or whatever, physician, the root meaning for physician is teacher.
Mm.
And that's what we're supposed to, it's supposed to be someone who teaches us and guides us on the path to how to become balanced, to go back into a state of homeostasis. And you cannot, you know, you've heard before in the past, you know, about people who had doctors who smoked and drank, and it's like you look at them with this little bit of jaundice expression.
Yeah.
But it's true. I can only guide you by my experiences and my knowledge.
Yes, as far as you've gone.
Mm-hmm. Right, and knowledge is not necessarily wisdom. It takes putting knowledge to work to acquire wisdom. And so for me to say that I've arrived and that I'm healed, no. Because if I was totally healed of everything, I'd transcend, you guys couldn't even see me. It'd be like James Redfield in the Soul State Prophecy said about the Mayans,
mm-hmm.
you know, that they had evolved to this higher state and you couldn't see them anymore.
Right, right. Vibrating so high.
Mm-hmm. But there was a lot of healing that I needed to experience, and I didn't even realize it, you know, because you're in such a state of denial most of the time, you know, no matter what's happened to you, you label it, you know, well, that, you know, that's love, or that's, you know, that's family, that's acceptance, that's, you know, whatever. So you don't always realize the little traumas that your inner child is hanging on to.
Mm-hmm.
And so following the direction of these teachers and walking their path has been my own healing, because, you know, there's so much stuff that we all go through, myself included, but it's been amazing personal and spiritual growth for me to study with these people, to learn these things, and then what I learn when someone comes to me for consultation, I can tell them from experience, not necessarily by relating my story, but by experience that, you know, if you try this, you know, try doing this, try going this way, possibly look at it this way, and how do you feel? And so, you know, there's just as we have DNA, we have spiritual DNA. So just as you have the same bone structure and eye color and hair color of your parents, you have a lot of the emotional stuff of your parents from before your conception, because there is cellular information on both or on all levels. And, you know, students of Judean Christian religions can go back into the Old Testament, and there's and I should have been prepared to have the scripture verse for you, but it's the iniquities of the fathers will be passed on 3, yea, 4 generations.
Mm-hmm.
So it's not that, you know, you're going to get thrown in jail if your father robbed a bank, but, you know, if your father or mother had an issue with something that they had not been able to resolve before your seed was created, this gets passed to you the same as hair color, eye color, and everything.
Sure. Yeah, true.
And we'll be back with more Inside Scoop Live after these important announcements.
Inside Scoop Live is a global internet-based broadcast specializing in interviewing published authors about their current books and areas of expertise. I'm Juanita Watson, the host of the show, and invite you to join me as I bring to the air both well-known and upcoming writers. You will hear my guests talk candidly about their books, their life experience, specific topics, and the business of being an author in today's literary world. Always interesting and current, my intention is to bring our audience high-quality discussions that spotlight a vast diversity of authors in the field today. Our interviews are syndicated and archived for availability 24/7 through direct podcast and MP3 download. And as always, I love to hear from listeners. Have a look at our website, InsideScoopLive.com, send me an email, comment on previous guests, and let me know who you'd like to hear on the show. I'll do my best to bring you your favorite authors live and direct. And joining me today is author Milana Ashley, author of the award-winning expat memoir, Gringos in Paradise, Our Honduras Odyssey. And your websites again, gringos-in-paradise.com, as well as wisdompathway.com. Do you think there's an urgency right now to heal those, the generational issues that you're talking about?
I feel that, you know, everything is speeding up.
And this is something that my... This is something that's really talked about right now a lot because of the whole 2012, the end of the Mayan calendar that we're talking about.
Right, right. And see, there is a change that is coming because the Mayan calendar is based on the heavens. It's on planets and moons and stars, and including the sun. The sun is a star. And we're beginning to look at the fact that our star is a binary. You know, scientists are, because most stars are binary. And on December 31st, when we turn the page of the calendar and we go into 2010, the world will not end. And the same with the Mayan calendar. But it will be an end of something. And we're already seeing Earth changes going on. From my understanding, from what I've put together, from all of my research and what Papa has taught, is that what we're labeling as global warming was going to happen anyway. We're in the fifth sun. This is Mayan teaching, is that we're in the fifth sun. So that means processes to this Earth have happened before. And there will be changes. How extreme the changes will be are up to us in part because, again, the density of energy, you know, and I hate to throw this in because it seems like it's so far off on a different subject, but David Hawkins wrote a book, Power versus Force, and he is an eminent psychiatrist, and this was a 25-year study. He co-worked with Linus Pauling, so, you know, to give him even more credibility,
mm-hmm.
but vicariously. But he took the study of kinesiology and he applied it to emotions and mental conditions because that was his forte. And the book Powers versus Force is a 25-year study of applied kinesiology and in the discipline of psychology, mental and emotional arena. And he calibrated the density of negative thoughts. You know, even biblically it says, you know, the despair is a tool of the devil. And it's like, oh, well, you know, we're supposed to be good. No, it's not for being good. It's for being healthy because, you know, your mother told you, birds of a feather flock together. Well, if you're thinking negatively, you're going to draw other people to you. That empowers the energy field, and then you draw negative things to you from the outside because our brains are like little antennas. And what happens is we become self-fulfilling prophecies. So this is, I think, part of the reason why we see people very interested in emotional healing and spiritual healing and spiritual growth, and because we all intuitively know that there's a change in process. And the more that we can affect the consciousness of the planet and then stop raping it, because as we deforest it, as we go into the freezing depths of the ocean and we drill into the ground and break out this immense heat, things are going to crack, things are going to mold, things are going to change. And what we do is whatever is going to happen in the heavens that the calendar, Mayan calendar, is based on, we're going to impact it to a greater degree because we have raped the earth.
Mm-hmm.
You had mentioned one time to me about going to Jamaica.
Mm-hmm.
And there's the most wonderful story about when we went to Jamaica and we were in the grill and we were walking the beach, and this is around the time of Easter, and the weather had been beautiful when we got there, and then one morning we woke up and it was cold and the sea was rough and we were, you know, right on the beach. And so we were walking the beach and we walked way to the end of a peninsula, and there was this little cantina type thing that, you know, the fishermen go for breakfast and they go in the afternoon when they come in from fishing and drink their beer and sell their fish and this kind of thing. And we were standing there on the edge of the cliff watching out over the ocean, and one of the fishermen came over to talk to us, and he was asking of us where we were from and this kind of stuff, Jamaican guy. And then I said, oh, you know, this must be not too great day for you, you know, because you can't go out and work, you can't go out and fish. And he goes, oh, you know, she, and he points to the ocean, she has to have her time, just like all women do, and clean herself. And he says, and you look at the beach, and you're going to see all the trash on the beach. Because, you know, the people, they throw the trash in her and throw the trash in her. And it's like when you throw trash in you, when you put food in your mouth, when you put too much drink in your mouth, when you defile your body, what do? You throw it up. You clean your body. And the ocean, she's doing it. And see, the earth does too.
It's a living organism.
Absolutely.
Yeah. Beautiful. Beautiful. So how is your work in metaphysics and your spiritual work tying into, say, this book that you've just put out and other messages that you're trying to get out to the public?
Well, the book that I wrote, Gringos in Paradise, Our Honduras Odyssey, is not necessarily a metaphysical book,
mm-hmm.
but who I am is the person who wrote it. So the way that I see things is based on wanting to be in balance with my environment. But when I first started writing the book, it was meant to be a way of sharing what our experience was with our family and our friends that thought we were absolutely crazy and pulling up stakes and coming to Honduras. We moved into a totally Honduran neighborhood. I have one neighbor who's bilingual, and, you know, her lifestyle, she's busy. She's gone most of the time. So that left me with only my husband to talk to. And the days that we were both under stress, the last people that we wanted to talk to was each other. But I'm a Gemini, so I need to talk to people.
Mm-hmm.
So what I would do is I started writing. I was, you know, we live on Social Security here, and I have a housekeeper cook, I have a groundskeeper for the property, and so I had the luxury of being able to sit down and write at the computer. I had no internet. I couldn't email anybody. I had no telephone to be able to call anybody, and nobody here would have understood me anyway because I didn't speak Spanish. So I wrote, and I was scheduled to take a group of women on a retreat into Puerto Morales, Mexico, to the Isle of Women, and I just had the impression, get 20 pages done. And after I was through with the retreat, then I was going to fly into Missouri and visit my daughter and my grandson, and my boys were going to come in. My boys are in military service, so they, you know, they float from one place to another. But while I was in Puerto Morales, I met a woman that was staying across from the bed and breakfast that my group was at. And she came and sat and had breakfast with us and visited. She is from New York. And what it ends up is she's a literary agent.
Mm-hmm.
And so I asked her if it would be an imposition, if she would read just this 20 pages that I had brought with me that I was going to give my daughter and give me her opinion. And so she did. She was very kind. And when she was through reading it, she took me aside and she said, this needs work. but this is very good. She says, I sometimes work with people for years before they have the ability to be able to draw people into their story. She says, you have a gift. You need to finish this. And she says, and it's not my genre, so you'll have to find another. I sent her a copy of it when the book was finished and then let her know that it had won the literary award from Reader's View. But, when I first started writing, it was just to explain to friends and family what we were doing. And then I realized, I need to go back to the beginning here on the thought process involved and the preparation for, because other people might be interested in doing what we're doing. And so the book is the first 8 months that we were here, the letting go, the making the decision, how we made the decision, the letting go of family and friends and personal things, because you definitely need to downsize to come here, because you can't apply for residency before you get here, and you can't bring all your stuff in if you're not a resident.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, other than that, you're going to have to ship it in as though you're going to sell it, and then you've got all kinds of customs on it. So when in meditation, what had come to me was that we were to bring only 10 boxes.
That's not very much.
And when I started looking for ways to ship things in, I realized the best I could do was U.S. mail to a freight forwarder and then have it shipped in. And for a 3-cube box, that was going to run about $100. So I had to look at everything I owned as whether or not it was worth $100 to me. And it was amazing to look at your things that way. So... and I explain it all in the book, how we gave our heirloom things to our children when we left Florida. So that wasn't as much of an issue from Hawaii. But once we decided to give the things that we had the greatest emotional attachment to, we just gave them away to our friends. And when you give the things that you love to the people that you love, it's like, there's no pain involved.
Absolutely. And so no regrets. I already know the answer to this, but no regrets on your part.
Yes. There have been days, especially in the first year, that I would walk out on my veranda and go, oh, thank you, God, for this blessing to be able to be here. And then there were other days I'd walk out on the very same veranda, address the very same entity and go, how much longer do I have to do this? But, the pirate in me loves the thrill of testing myself to impose limitations. But the coward in me wants to sit and eat popcorn and watch it all on a movie screen.
Yeah,
okay. So it does help to have a partner that's also open to an adventure, not being anchored to one place for his identity. So that now, if I had it to do all over again, the only difference is I'd really like to haul the people that I love from the islands here with us, or find a cheaper way to be able to go back and visit.
You miss Hawaii.
Hawaii touches your heart.
Mm-hmm.
In a very special way, in a way that you can't duplicate anywhere else. Honduras has much of the same flora, the fruits, the vegetables, the fresh fish. The people here are very kind. They're very accepting. I don't think anybody is ever as accepting as island people are, because, that's such a melting pot out there. But these people here are. But there's an intensity of life that comes with poverty that doesn't exist in the Aloha spirit.
Interesting to be able to witness that.
The little realizations that come to me as I live here and see things different. Even I have been doing a lot of planting in my yard. My yard's about 3/4 of an acre. Hawaii was an acre.
Mm-hmm.
And one of the things that I loved in Hawaii was to walk outside in the early morning with my cat when the air is still. And she and I would walk our property, and we would walk through these pockets of fragrance. And, you know, the forbidden fruit of India and the Chinese chestnut and jasmine, all of this, and even the fruits and the bananas and stuff and the citrus trees in bloom. And when I moved here, I realized my yard, as gorgeous as it is with all the different colored flowers and stuff, had no fragrance.
Oh, really?
Yes.
Well, how
so I started incorporating hunting, looking at people's yards to see if they had things that I didn't have so I could offer to trade things I did have, to bring plumeria and jasmine and white ginger and things like that into my yard. I had roses, but even the roses didn't have a fragrance. And part of it is the poverty of the soil.
Oh, isn't that interesting?
Yeah, so I taught the caretaker how to make compost.
Mm-hmm.
So we've been making, and he was amazed. And, you know, he didn't understand why I'm collecting all this garbage instead of raking it up and getting rid of it. But, because that's the process here, is to rake up everything and burn it. Get rid of it.
Mm-hmm.
Because, you know, could be a snake, could be a spider in it, whatever. And, so I taught him about composting, and of course, you know, he just thought I was a little whacked out person, but that's okay because I pay him. And then one day I had cut off the top of some Diefenbachia that was growing in a pot and put it in styrofoam and water. He had never seen that before either, to root it. And then when it was time to plant it in the garden instead of a pot, the soil in the garden was so poor, he asked me if I wanted him to go out to the river and get some dirt. And I said, no, we're going to use the dirt from the garden, and we're going to mix compost in it. So when I showed him how to mix the compost into the dirt and what I was talking about, you know, you could see the transformation on his face. The light came on, and he goes, oh, my gosh, you know, this is like the dirt from up in the mountains, up in the jungle in the mountains, where people have not, you know, built houses and dug ditches and deforested and things like that. Because, you know, he was born and raised on the river bank beside, you know, right behind the house, basically. So he's watched as, you know,
the
fruit companies.
Yeah.
The decline to the soil and things. But so now my yard has fragrance. I have white ginger and roses and lemon trees and orange trees.
Oh,
and
you paint such a beautiful picture. It sounds beautiful, Milana.
It is paradise.
Yes.
It truly is paradise. But, you know, that was one of the things that we had already realized before we left Hawaii, because, you know, Hawaii was going to be our paradise.
Mm.
And then, you know, there's, you know, you
things
like
change.
Two men looked out of prison bars, and one saw mud, the other saw stars. We were looking for paradise, but we had already learned that paradise is elusive.
Mm-hmm.
Kind of like reaching for a star. But we also learned that the thrill of life comes from trying to grasp what may seem unattainable. So if we don't keep reaching, then we fail to live. And that's what we had to do, is that we, you know, we know what we want. And so we hold that dream in our heart, and we pray on it, we meditate on it, and we allow the law of attraction to bring that vibration that matches who and what we are and what we want into fruition.
And here you are in Honduras, and it's just all unfolding before your eyes in such a beautiful way.
It truly, truly is. And, you know, there are so many days that I am so thankful. You know, I watch what's happening in the States. You know, like I said, you know, that's my roots.
Yes.
But there are so many changes. Here, this is, to me, the Spanish-speaking Mayberry from the 1950s. 1950s, I can relate to.
Yeah.
Those were my childhood. And it's, you know, as naturopaths, we don't want to be involved in all the medical stuff that's going on in the U.S.
Oh, it's just in chaos right now.
Mm-hmm. And my husband has had surgery for a hernia since we moved here.
Mm-hmm. In Honduras?
And yes.
Mm-hmm.
We have, of course, there's no Medicare or Medicaid, or we don't have insurance. You know, that's kind of against our philosophy.
Sure.
So we pay cash. So for $2,000, the doctor did the surgery. That was the time in the hospital. He did the surgery the old way, which is my husband had another hernia operation while we were in Hawaii that was done with these new, you know, seals itself into your body type thing.
Mm-hmm.
And it's not holding as well as the old way.
Really? Not surprising.
And it was such a positive experience for him. You know, I really hate that he's had two surgeries, but I'm so glad that he had the first one in Hawaii so he had the basis of comparison.
Oh, good point.
He got bit by a dog about 3 weeks ago, and he treated it himself because, you know, that's his training. But in some process of the healing, probably walking in the river when it was flooded because our dog likes to swim in that or whatever, there became an infection. And, of course, you know, this is an area that there's fungus as well as bacteria, so you can develop this, you know, like in vitiligo.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, that's kind of a fungal bacterial situation. And so what he did was go to the Swiss hospital here, and they took him in, they cleaned it up, they gave him antibiotics and IV antibiotics, and it was 700 lymphs. So you're looking at $30. That's it. Yeah.
That's incredible.
They don't have a welfare system here. You know, for people that are can't work,
mm-hmm.
They might stand on the corner, and those that are wealthy enough to drive give money out the window at the intersection.
Mm-hmm.
And
mm-hmm.
they have hospitals that the country pays for through taxes,
mm-hmm.
for the very poor. And when you go into that kind of a hospital, you know, here you don't go to hospital without all your family going anyway. But there, your family goes with you, and they care for you under the doctor's supervision.
Oh, you know,
they don't. They bathe you. They bring you food. They feed you, that kind of thing. And the doctor goes around and makes the rounds and prescribes medicine. You take the prescription and go outside the hospital to a pharmacy to get the medicine and bring it in, and the doctor administers it.
That's
for the very poor.
Yes.
Then there's another level. If you can afford to pay, then there's a little bit higher quality of care. And then the fruit company built a hospital here originally for its employees, and now it's become a you know, an open-to-anybody hospital, and that's where my husband had his surgery. And it's very much like U.S. hospitals, only, again, family is always with you to support you and take care of you. And so your spouse is, you know, they set it up so your spouse can sleep there with you. You know, it's wonderful that the way that they have the care program set up. And a lot of the doctors that are here, to be a doctor and a dentist, you have to be bilingual. You may not practice your English, but you have to be bilingual. And many of them have studied not only here, but also in the U.S. and in Europe.
Mm-hmm.
So the doctor that did my husband's surgery did his fellowship in, I think, Indiana.
They're good professional people.
Absolutely.
That's fantastic.
Absolutely.
You really, Milana, paint such an unbelievable picture of Honduras, and I am looking at our time, and it's kind of coming to an end here, and I feel like I could just talk with you all day about all the different facets of what you do in Honduran life, and I really, you know, we will have to close here, but I really hope we get a chance to talk again and have you back on the program, because you do have so much to talk about, and I feel like we're just hitting the surface today.
Well, let me close with this, is that Gringos in Paradise, our Honduras Odyssey, is the most amazing adventure. It is our adventure and our misadventure as we stumble through learning to put aside our U.S. thinking, to become comfortable in a country that is not the country of our birth. And I still, even here, I do consultations over the internet. I do consultations. I take care of the little people the local people in the neighborhood that come to the front desk with their, or the front gate with their sick babies and trade their coconuts and bananas for, you know, what I can do for them here.
Mm-hmm.
But one of the things that we do is that we do a natural health newsletter. And if you go to my website, Wisdom Pathway, that you can subscribe to the newsletter. And if you do, it will offer you a free gift. It's a downloaded meditation tape. And you can, you know, we email it to you. You can download it to your computer. And it is a healing meditation. When I recorded it originally in Florida and I had played it for someone, they said, oh, you know, that's a Buddhist healing technique. But it is... I was using it with my client, and it made such an amazing effect that they wanted to, they started asking me to record it. And so this is, I feel that part of where we're at right now in being able to heal the conditions in the U.S. is that this is a time of benevolence. It's like in the Native American culture, they have the potlatch, the great giveaway,
mm-hmm.
when a nation was coming into a time, you know, severe winter, or when they felt like they were going to need more than they had, what they did was take the best of what they had and give it away to someone else.
Yeah.
And that way, what it does is that it creates a void in the field of energy, and the universe will not allow a void. It always fills it. And that's why when you clean out your garage and you give everything away, your garage ends up filled back
full again.
Absolutely. And so part of my fulfilling this direction that I have felt in benevolence is to offer the healing meditation free when someone is interested enough in health and natural health that they subscribe to our newsletter, which is called Through Your Health.
Mm.
So I hope that people will read the book and enjoy it and think about what their personal dreams are that maybe they've put away on the back burner, and that, you know, maybe now is the time to follow your dreams and to expand your limits and face your fears and accelerate your heartbeat.
Oh, that's beautiful. Such really powerful messages at a time where we need powerful messages like that.
Oh, thank you.
Yes. I think that this is the first book of many coming from you.
Well, I'm kind of balancing. You know, we're going into the rainy season, so it's a great time to write.
Right.
You're not going to have the internet connection anyway.
Yeah.
So I'm looking at, I just don't know which verse. I know I need to write more about Honduras because the first book has actually brought people from the U.S. here to look.
I'm sure. I'm sure.
And they always contact us, and we're always glad to have them do that. And yet, I know that the information on spirit and soul healing needs to be written and gotten out now, because there's such a an epidemic of fear
mm-hmm.
going through the world.
Let's have you come back.
Because there's so many changes.
Yeah, let's have you come back and talk about the epidemic of fear.
I would love to.
Yeah.
Love to.
I think that is a great topic to have you come back and talk about, and we will definitely do that soon, okay?
In the meantime, follow your instincts, follow your heart, and don't die wondering what if.
Oh.
That you had. I mean, what's the worst thing that can happen?
Right. Exactly. Milana, it has been such a pleasure. We'll mention your websites again, gringos-in-paradise.com, which is your book title, as well as wisdompathway.com. And thank you so very much. And you just have a blessed and beautiful day today.
Thank you, Juanita. It's been a joy to be able to talk to you.
All right. Take care. All right, listeners, that's been Milana Ashley, all the way from Honduras. What a fascinating, insightful, and just very well-rounded conversation today. I am sure you have enjoyed it. We will definitely have her back on the program. And so I want to thank you for tuning in and hanging in here with us today on Inside Scoop Live. I'm Juanita Watson, and until next time.